Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Zinkenkopf have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Hull, shoots good! Bobby Hull!
Doudou trying to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bourque and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men. Cutting for the net, he's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brunet carries in, rolling in front of the net, and shot! He's our dad following the play, and he misses the short cut. Here he is again. Scores! He's our dad!
It is Miller waiting around the net. Waiting. He's
all right, hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL Breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com. We're bringing you all the on and off ice action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues with our fantasy reports, including the IR, waiver wire report, goalie report, and line updates. Today is, of course, Friday, November 2nd. Wrapping up yet another week of fantasy hockey, lots of things going on. Today we're going to talk about, other than the fantasy reports as usual, some early season buy low candidates. I know it's a little bit early in the year to talk about that, but we're all in leagues where sometimes we have guys who like to come out of the gate trading, or those early season panickers, even though George and I generally preach patience in fantasy hockey, especially here at the beginning of the year. Hey, man, if there's somebody in your league who's not so patient, getting a little bit worried with that superstar or that mid-tier player who's not producing out of the gate as expected, you never know. You could find some people who are willing to make that snap judgment trade. Hey, in one of my main leagues, there was a fantasy owner who was pretty weak in goaltending, has a solid number one, but really has no goaltenders behind that. And he made the ultimate knee-jerk reaction trade 2 weeks ago, trading a sixth-round pick for McElhinney, giving back a 17th round trip. So he gave up 11 rounds for McElhinney, even though he was 3-0 at the time. It was something like a 2.76 goals against average. The save percentage wasn't much better. And Darling had, you knew it was coming back. But, so that's kind of what, even though this is a little bit early to have this conversation, that's kind of one of the reasons, or an example of one of the reasons why I'm having this conversation with George. So, George, that's exactly where I want to start. You know, you're hearing that crazy example, and I'm sure you could tell me a litany of similar ones of people calling you and asking you for advice, whether it be football, baseball, or hockey. So that's kind of what I want to get a sense for you. A player or two or more. I don't want to sort of hem you in. If you have seven players from a certain position, by all means, tell us. I just don't expect that. But I'm looking for a suggestion or two or three from each position of a player who you think, hey, this might be an interesting buy low candidate, especially if you have, as I said, that panicker in your league. So, George, let's start with the center position. I know center position is obviously very deep, so you're less likely to sort of have that need for a center. But still, I want to hear from all the positions. So starting at center, is there anybody who jumps out at you as a good buy low candidate, whether it is a big-name player or that sort of mid-tier in the meat of your lineup kind of player? Who jumps out at you as a possibility to say, hey, people could be freaking out a little bit about this guy, because of either statistics or the circumstances that you're saying, okay, don't jump the gun, but hey, if you're going to trade him for me for, 80 cents on the dollar, why not? So, George, center, who jumps out at you as a buy low candidate early here in the season?
Well, I think the number one guy at center that jumps out as a buy low is Anze Kopitar. I got the whole Kings team is off to a horrendous start. I mean, they just, they lost like 19 games in a row. Jonathan Quick's on IR. He's not on IR. He's back on IR. Dustin Brown out. Now he's back in. They've had no consistency there from anybody. So Kopitar is somebody, like I said, he's a strange one because, before last year, it looked like he was, maybe going on a downturn here. Then last year turned into an MVP-type season. Now this year, is it just a slow start? Is it the team? Is it Kopitar just had one magical year and now he's back to being, you know, once again, on the downswing of his career? But still, someone wants to sell very cheap. That's what we're looking at here. You know, guys who are going cheap. So Andre Kopitar will be my number one center as far as a buy low candidate.
All right, that seems like the perfect guy of exactly who we're talking about. Because with how, and you already mentioned it, with how bad LA is playing right now, really pretty much in all phases of the game, you know, I can definitely see somebody saying, hey, man, this is not a good idea. I don't know what I'm doing here. I was a bad hire in the draft kind of pick. So he would definitely be, I think, a really good target because it's really hard to see for any, even if LA is in the, you know, the sort of the shit can, and I probably should have said shit, but, even if they're really going to be a bad team this year, even if they're going to be a non-playoff team this year, it's hard to see him producing at this low as a level. You know, so I think he's exactly the kind of guy that sort of fits this mold. All right, George, let's move it on to left wing then. Anybody at the left wing position jumping out at you as a particularly good target to sort of prey on here early in the season?
Yeah, now I do think when you're looking for buy lows, wings are a better chance to buy low, and generally we need wings with centers. As you said, centers are deep. I'm not going to say Brandon Saad, okay? Not going to say it. You know, I'm still going to go down with the ship in the sky in, like, every league. I don't know. I just – if ever my own Achilles heel, it is Mr. Brandon Saad. I just can't escape, as Scott well knows from the leagues we play in and talking on shows. He's just somebody I can't seem to stay away from. That being said, another player who was on several of my teams last year, not this year, not because I didn't think he'd be good, but because he's went earlier than I wanted to take him, and I didn't get a chance to grab him, left wing, Jaden Schwartz, St. Louis. Another guy, all right, a little banged up coming into the season, a little bit, and, you know, just hasn't been quite the same player we expected. Now, maybe we should have seen this coming, because you know, that entire top line, Schwartz, Tarasenko, and whoever they're going to put on the right wing, faltered down the stretch last season. You know, so maybe it wasn't just a bad thing. Maybe it was a sign of things to come. Only had 24 goals, 59 points last year. This year, one goal, 4 points. You know, so what's a guy I'm probably going to take a shot on again, that him and Tarasenko, they'll figure it out. Blues, it's another team. Got up to a, not as bad as the Kings, but got to a slow start that we expect more from. You know, so I do expect them to get better. So he's somebody I might be more than willing to take a shot on. I think I know who you might say, Scott. And I'm curious to see if you and I'm not going to say this guy. But I have another guy as well. And this is the one, though, on the opposite, though. I have him on several leagues, and I don't expect him. Even though he's a top name, I don't expect him to really return to prominence, and that's Nikolai Ehlers. So he's the guy that'd be the opposite. If you could sell him for 80 cents on a dollar, I'd sell him for 80 cents on a dollar. You know, he went through that terrible goal drought between the end of last year and the playoffs. There's one goal so far this season just scored before the Finland trip. So Nikolai Ehlers is someone I'd actually want to move on from.
You know, it's interesting you should say that because I've sort of been – I don't have Ehlers, and I like Ehlers a lot, at least, you know, here early in his career. But I have to agree with you in the fact that he is a guy I've sort of been worried about. Now, I think if somebody's going to sell me him cheap, if I'm not going to have to pay a high draft pick price, if they want sort of a middle-of-my-roster guy, I'd be tempted. But if they want anything near – to, you know, what his essentially draft price value would be. I completely agree with you that I just haven't liked what I've seen from him in particular. And a couple of those young forwards, I mean, Laine, you could sort of say the same thing a little bit. In fact, I was kind of he's one name I was particularly curious to see if he'd end up on your, you know, buy low list because, I mean, don't forget, we talked about on Monday. They put him down on the fourth line, and Maurice said, yeah, he might stay there a little while, you know, and he didn't say like a little while. He sort of left it open ended. He like, yeah, he might stay there. Now it's hard to imagine Laine staying there with that shot and you know and how good he looked last season. But as good as that, as much as I like that Winnipeg Jets team, and both me and you have talked about them a number of times the last couple of seasons, how they're just fun to watch to play. A number of those younger forwards are really off to a kind of a disturbing start. So I totally see where you're coming from with Nicholas Ehlers. Absolutely. So let's move it on to right wing, George. Dare I ask you, is line A buy low candidate for you, or you just think his name from the 44 goes last year, you know, people are still going to insist too much money that's like not really worth approaching because you're just not going to get him for any sort of discount whatsoever. But right wings in general, George, who jumps out at you?
Well, even if he was, Scott, I think yesterday killed it. Right? Had the hat trick yesterday. You know, I think that destroyed it. I think if this show was on Monday, yeah, he might have been on this list. But after yesterday had the hat trick, now, even if you want, if you were in the middle of negotiations with somebody to buy low on line A, they did, you know, oh, let's watch the game, see what happens. Well, you lost. You got crushed. You know, he had the hat trick. You know, the buy low was over. Yeah, so that's the one issue there here. As far as that's concerned, I don't think you can buy low on him anymore. I think you missed that window of opportunity, and it's not happening anymore. You know, right wing, I found harder to find somebody who's without naming, you know, I guess sort of cheating and naming guys who really aren't buy low just to get names out there. I mean, even now while we're doing this, I mean, I wrote down one name, but he's been okay. It's T.J. Oshie of Washington. Might be somebody you could buy low on here. And I'm going through a list of every team's right wing. I don't see anybody here outside of that. I mean, Nichushkin on it? I mean, no one wants him anyway. I don't see anybody here as far as a pure buy low guy I'd want. I got to a slow stuff that I get, even if you sold me the 60 cents on the dollar. So I'm actually more curious to see what name you came up here because I don't see anybody I'm dying to have.
Well, I kind of gave mine away because I agree with you that right wing was surprisingly tough because, as you sort of said, when we moved to wings is really sort of where you're looking for, you know, just because center is so deep. So why pay, if you're only getting a small discount, why pay for it at center when you could probably find something pretty decent, if not good, on the waiver wire, you know, unless you are talking about more of a star player. If you were talking about like Stamkos, for example, because, you know, those first 6-8 games, you know, I mean, that was one, and I think you even mentioned it in one of the recent shows that, you know, hey, Tampa, they're not even at the top of their game, and Kucherov and Stamkos aren't off to flaming hot starts. So that's one of the most impressive things about Tampa in general here early in the season. You know, but the last few games is starting to look a little bit better, so, you know, maybe he's sort of not on that list anymore. But right wing line A before last night's game, he was that guy. He was actually one of the guys I was thinking of when I suggested having this conversation. I think you pretty said it pretty succinctly about line A, that the hat trick probably bumps that out. Having said that, though, George, if he follows up that hat trick game with a couple of, you know, lame games, at least in terms of point production, you know, because let's be honest, like, you know, at least casual fans who are playing fantasy leagues, they're not necessarily watching all the games, and they're just looking at the box score. And if line A follows this up with a couple of games, two or three games where he doesn't put up any points, even if he plays really well in those games, he might sort of return to that. But he's the best guy that I sort of thought of who would sort of fall into that category. But to the point that you already made, the ship might have sailed on that last night with the hat trick. All right, George, now I imagine that, you know, defenseman, to be honest, I think is a little bit probably the toughest of the positions to identify, but I also didn't want to ignore it. So I was wondering if anybody in particular jumped out at you at the defensive position. There is one guy that I could think of who was a little bit talked about during the off season. So I'm kind of wondering if he's the guy that you're going to mention, since he has now moved to San Jose, the much nicer climate. But I won't give that away, even though I think it's obvious who I'm talking about. George, defenseman, any buy-low candidates jump out at you as particularly good opportunities right now?
Yeah, I knew who you were talking about before you said San Jose, and I agree. Carlson would be somebody, once again, maybe. But the problem with this is, you know, you mentioned Atlanta, and now we're going to Carlson. Name players, superstars. It's so hard. I mean, I know it's November. Receipt is still not a month old. To get someone to want to sell these guys for light, and where they drafted them is so difficult. You know, even in leagues where people don't or aren't experts, something like that, to get these guys to do that because they know their name. So they'll always hold value. You know, usually I find, you know, a football trade I tried to make yesterday to show you something. Guy, I asked, I was going to trade somebody, Eric Ebron, because I needed any wide receiver. It's a bye week hell, so I needed a wide receiver on my team. And I saw a guy, a team that had six wide receivers, but they have tight end problems, and they're not going to have a tight end next week. So listen, I know Ebron's off this week, but he plays next week. So I'll trade you Ebron, and I'll take any receiver. You know, Doug Baldwin seems to be your worst receiver, I'll take him. He starts laughing at me. I can't trade you Seattle's best wide receiver for Ebron. What? Are you looking at stats, buddy? Ebron has 14 receptions on the season for 140 yards and no touchdowns. All right, so what are you talking about? And the way I equate that to hockey is, once again, Baldwin coming into the season, yes, was Seattle's best wide receiver. But it doesn't matter now. Once the season starts, it doesn't matter what he was. It's what he is. That's where the value is. So the same thing with Carlson. Yes, coming into the season, he was a superstar. He's not that right now. Do I expect him to be that? Of course. Well, I want to buy low on him. But he's not right now. But the problem is convincing an owner of that for a superstar. It's much easier to do that with non-superstars. You know, to convince them it's not just not going to happen, you know, than it is a superstar. Because people want to hold on to superstars. You know, the example you brought up earlier, you will get people who just, screw it, I've had it, I'm tired of this crap. You know, this guy not playing, this guy doing this in another game. Look, Lonnie would have been the perfect right wing if he didn't get the hat trick yesterday. Now he did. So people now, that buys another 2 to 3 weeks before the owner gets hired again. Just the way it works here. So that's why Carlson, I agree with you, but he'll be harder to get here. Well, you look at the defenseman, though. As you said, this is a hard position. I think this is an easy one, but this is also the problem because there's a ton of them that I think are buy lows, that have slow starts. You know, you said Carlson. Absolutely, I'd like to get Carlson. You know, I'd love to have Eric Carlson on my team, especially if I can buy low on him. But there were plenty of others. You know, maybe not the superstar status he is, you know, without having quite gotten off to that great start. If someone still owned Ekman Larson, I know Buffalo had 3 points last night, so that's a problem. Once again, he may have taken him out of this. But he's a guy I wouldn't mind having. You know, Provorov for Philadelphia. You can go on and on. Seth Jones, I know he missed the first 4 or 5 weeks. But fantasy owners are not patient. Not patient at all. You know, the fact that he's got those slow starts as he's returned, maybe get him for a little cheaper. You know, I have no problem getting any of these guys. So I think defense is actually the opposite. Like, there's plenty of guys here. It's one where if I went to one person and said, no, okay, next, no, next, I'll just keep going until I find somebody. You know, if sooner or later, I would assume I'd find somebody who wants to deal someone. But defense, I think, is loaded with guys you could find here because it's defense. You know, it's not like wings. The defense don't always score points. You know, they can go 2 or 3 weeks without getting one, even on the power, even on the power, first power play unit. So it's not a shock. I mean, they load up all at once here. I think defense is loaded with guys you can get.
Well, you know, I love that sort of like did a great job of proving me wrong there. I guess probably a better way, and this isn't trying to, you know, like excuse myself in terms of how I, you know, brought it to you, the question that is. But I guess, you know, since fantasy-wise, unless, you know, your league is really focused on, you know, hits and blocks, you know, other than the Carlsons and the Hedmans of the world, defenseman is certainly not necessarily dismissed, but it's certainly the least prioritized position. So it's just the position that people, that fantasy owners tend to put the least focus on. You know, so I probably could have phrased my question a little bit better in terms of like prioritizing it. But the position that I think, that I'm really curious if you agree, but I think has the most potential for buy low opportunities here early in the season. Putting that in context, is goaltender. Because I think there's a number of guys who are, by the end of the season, going to be, you know, high-value guys, or at least some really good, solid fantasy prospects who are not off to good starts. So, George, do you agree with me, just like you were talking about defensemen, do you agree that goaltending is similar, that there's a bunch of guys here that might be some really good buy-low opportunities, or do you see something different when you're looking at the goaltender position? George?
No, goaltender seems to be, I don't know if I call it loaded, but there are some guys here as well you might be able to buy low on. The number one guy that comes to my mind is Bobrovsky on Columbus. I mean, yeah, he's got all sorts of issues. He does, there's a lot of talk there that he's worried about his contract more than his play, but he's had, and he's close to the Patrick Laine thing, you know, where he may be a little too late here. He's had 2 good starts in a row now. You know, is he turning it around? You know, has he finally put the contract out of his mind here? So he's a guy where if you want Bobrovsky, I think that window is closing. I don't think it's closed, but I think it's closing. So you better get on this and make that move, make that trade. Jake Allen could be considered here, but I don't think I'd go there. Tuukka Rask obviously sticks out as well. You know, somebody you want to buy low on. He's struggling again earlier in the season. Been a little better of late, but Halak is getting his fair share of starts. So I think you could buy incredibly low on Rask right now because you could actually try and sell. Hey, he's not even a starter anymore. You know, and try and get there, but then it goes, they're going to ask, well, if he's not a starter, why do you want him? You know, that sort of play that game. Hellebuck's got up to a bit of a slow start that he's selling. You might be able to buy low on. Martin Jones could also be put in here as far as guys. There's a lot of – no goalies really taken off so far this year. That's also the problem here. You know, a lot of goalies – some goalies have more wins than others. It's also part of scheduling. These games are all over the freaking place, one game on Halloween. You know, and so it's been strange. But that's also the reason why goaltenders in my mind – I don't know if there's anybody I'd say who's you can't get. Vasilevsky is probably somebody you can't get. But anybody else, I think, is at least – you can at least talk about getting – like I said, I don't think – you look at the fantasy point totals of goaltenders, it's not great. You know, forwards are outdoing them, which is strange. Usually in fantasy, you look at your top 10 players, at least in the leagues I generally play in, it's a mix of goaltenders and forwards. But now I look at these lists, it's all forwards. The goaltenders haven't caught up yet. You know, is that because those pads have been streamlined? You know, is that what's going on here? A lot more goals seem to be going in. You know, so you wonder when, you know, you're already hearing goalies bitching about it too. So you wonder if that's what's going on here. But I think, I don't know if there's one goalie, Scott, that I'd say is off limits here outside of probably Vasilevsky. Of course, they're gonna be, most of the others are harder to get. But goaltender is another place you could certainly find some value, guys who might give up. But the problem with the goaltender is also this. If you want to buy low, you almost certainly have to give a goaltender back. How many teams are going to have four goaltenders, assuming we start two? You know, generally everybody wants a backup, so you got to find a team with four goaltenders that's willing to trade one. That's very difficult. That's why trading for a goaltender can be difficult for that reason. There's nobody on the waiver wire.
That's very good. That's an excellent way of sort of putting it in context, George. Yeah, because there's not a whole lot of goaltenders who are off to, as you said, in general, in a off to a really good start that you don't necessarily think they're going to keep it up. You know, that maybe, you know, Bob in the bottom might drop out. I mean, you know, Gress has a 218 goals against average so far in his seven game slate, five game start. But do we really think he's going to keep that up? Even if you are buying in on Trotz making that team better defensively overall and therefore helping the goaltender, I don't think anybody's going to be convinced with the small sample size that, oh, this is the way to go. Maybe a Ben Bishop, you know, because I'm not sure if I believe he's going to keep his goals against average at 226 and a 925 save percentage. I think, you know, Bishop is going to give you prime number two fantasy goaltender numbers, you know, so I don't think anybody's just going to want to give him up. But again, if you're talking about one of these other starters, some of the guys that you mentioned, a Hellebuck, if you think Rask is going to, you know, rebound as well, Bobrovsky, you sort of mentioned, if you're sort of confident in their numbers that they're going to return to the, you know, top 10 status that you kind of expected them to be, and you think that, you know, Bishop's going to eventually sort of regress to sort of a top 15 guy, somewhere between the top 10 and 20 ranking kind of thing, then maybe you sort of do that. But that's actually a really, really good point. And what about Carey Price? You know, I mean, putting him in that same category, do we really believe that Montreal's going to, you know, play as well as they have so far this season? That's hard not to think that he's going to sort of regress to more of a, you know, fantasy number two guy, even when Shea Weber comes back. So unless you have one of those guys, so to the point that you're making, you've got to find somebody who has, like, you know, four goaltenders or three, or they're willing to trade their third goaltender if they feel like they're pretty solid in goal overall, or you have to have one of these guys that you think is going to regress and be able to dangle them. You know, I mean, do you believe in Ranta? I mean, I actually do. I don't know if – I don't think he's necessarily going to be top 10 guy, but I think his numbers aren't going to regress mightily, you know, if you are on the opposite side of the fence of that. You know, if you think that by the end of the year, by where at the trading deadline, that, you know, Arizona is going to be what they've been the last few years, and, you know, a half – you know, Ranta's goals against average is going to be half a goal higher at that point, then maybe he becomes an option for you. But other than that, you know, your point is well made. Some of the other guys, you know, who certainly their goals against average or the save percentage or both aren't very good to start the season. Matt Murray, Holtby, Mike Smith, although, I mean, I think Mike Smith is really a solidly, you know, back end of the number two fantasy goaltender. But Calgary has been starting to come around a little bit and play better the last half dozen games or so. So at least, you know, the wins are starting to sort of pile up a little bit, even if his goals against average and save percentage isn't improving all that dramatically just yet. All right, well, I certainly see this as a conversation, George, that we'll probably revisit probably in another month or two when it's sort of, you know, get one-third into the season, a quarter, you know, solidly a quarter into the season, you know, when we have a little bit more on our plate. And this isn't so speculative, and we're not talking about necessarily knee-jerk reactions. But let's turn our attention to the IR and lines report. And at least when it comes to the IR and lines, it's not really too bad today. Because the last couple of weeks, man, I've had a lot to talk about. But we'll start in Anaheim as we usually do. Patrick Eves does return to the Anaheim Ducks lineups and opens up on a line with Henrik and Lidstrom. I certainly expect Comtos or Kase to take that spot when they eventually come back, although it doesn't look like that's going to be at least for another week or two for both of those players. Silverberg also returns to the line and takes his spot where he's been the last couple of seasons next to Kessler and Cogliano. And your top line, at least their last game, was Getzlaff, Raquel, and Aberg. Aberg, first Anaheim Duck to have back-to-back multi-goal games since 2013, which, you know, Anaheim hasn't always been an offensive juggernaut, but when you're going back a few years, you're talking about Getzlaff and Perry Moore in their prime, a few other good players that they've had over the years. Obviously, Kessler was more of an offensive force when he first got to Anaheim, so it's a little bit surprising that it's sort of 5 years since that has happened in Anaheim. Also for the Ducks, Mason with that upper body injury is listed as day-to-day, missed the last couple of games. Looks likely he'll miss one, maybe two more games before he comes back. If not, I would expect him to land on the IR. It doesn't seem that way, but keep your eye out for that situation since Mason is sort of a guy who's owned, I guess, a little more than 50% of the league, so he's really more of a depth guy fantasy-wise. Arizona, not so much an injury or lines update, but I couldn't not give you just a little bit tidbit. I mean, I think most of us who pay attention to hockey have already been noticing it, but this team, just four goals scored total in the first five games that they've played. And even before Galchenyuk came back, which is something that I was saying keep an eye on, I think it's going to sort of kick the offense in gear at least somewhat more in Arizona. 27 goals the last six games since that five-game start of anemic offense. I'm not necessarily telling fantasy owners to run out and pick up every Arizona Coyote in the top six, but certainly if you're streaming players or you're in a deeper league and you have some disappointing players that you're looking to drop, they are a team to start paying attention to. I said a couple of weeks ago, look around Thanksgiving. I think you're going to find some fantasy-worthy players there that might be becoming a little bit earlier than I predicted for the Arizona Coyotes and fantasy owners. In Boston, McAvoy with that upper body injury, which there's some debate from a lot of people around the league, both Boston beat writers and otherwise. Is it a concussion? Is it a shoulder injury? Either way, he's on the IR, has missed five games. He was on the ice last week, but he hasn't been on the ice since, and there is quote-unquote concern here. So if you are a McAvoy owner, you are looking for a replacement for more than just a couple of more games or more than just a week or so, you might want to sort of, especially if McAvoy is sort of one of your top two defensemen. Again, I'm not saying here this early in the season you got to go out and trade for another guy, but you certainly want to be looking at the waiver wire for possibly a significant replacement and maybe possibly make that move depending on what your team, you know, looks like and the other defensemen that you have. Also for the Boston Bruins, Backes with that upper body injury is expected to return this weekend and has not been confirmed, but it is an expectation. He has been practicing and in line rushes the last couple of days. Also noticeable for the Bruins, Donato demoted, and he, obviously that's pretty notable because there are a lot of players, fantasy owners, who did draft Donato later in the draft or even some in the middle of the draft thinking that, hey, he was earmarked for that second line right wing and he was going to bloom with the teaser he gave at the end of last year. Now, I do expect him to be eventually recalled, but I do think they're going to keep him down there for at least a couple of weeks, if not a month or two, for him to really get his game going, because it basically, top to bottom, that game was missing. He wasn't scoring, there was no physicality in his game, and he just was not sort of being responsible offensively or defensively. So keep him in mind, keep him on your watch list, because I do think he'll eventually come back up, and if we're looking 6 weeks from now, and he's sort of playing better in the minors, and they still haven't found that second line scoring that they're looking for, I still think that opportunity is there, but obviously if you're on your fantasy team, he is very droppable right now. In Chicago, another player who's been off to a younger player who's been off to a very disappointing start, who was sort of earmarked by a lot of people to sort of break out this year, a guy I certainly tabbed as somebody who I was very interested in as a back end of my roster kind of guy because I thought he could be this guy. He was a keeper choice in my league with George because I got him so late in the draft so I could use a late-round draft pick to sort of cover him in the fifth round. But Nick Schmaltz, a healthy scratch, and Quenneville said, this is a wake-up call. We expect more. We expected him to break out this year. He has not done that whatsoever. He's a healthy scratch, so they're certainly looking to get his attention and get him kicked back in gear. For the Colorado Avalanche, Andrea Ghetto, who a guy I was sort of saying to keep your eye on coming off the IR, comes back, plays a couple of games, and he's back on the IR, listed as week-to-week with a lower body injury. And interestingly enough, Kamenov, and again, I'm not telling anybody to run out and pick him up fantasy-wise, but Kamenov, part of that trade that they made with Nashville last year, centering the second line with Kerfoot and Colin Wilson, just sort of finding it interesting. And again, I don't necessarily think it's fantasy-worthy, but on Eif-worthy to be an interesting move to see if it creates any production in particular. In Dallas, Radulov, that lower body injury, man, it seems like he really wants to come back for that Montreal game in particular. And certainly you talked about the fact that he's still sort of a little sore from how things ended, apparently, in Montreal, even though he was the one who left. Although, you know, there were certainly some stories about the fact that he was disappointed in the term and the money that they offered him, even though it was apparently about the same amount of money that he got in Texas. Although, of course, Texas doesn't have the state tax. That could be a factor. I don't know. But either way, comes back for that game, and he's immediately out the next game. So he's missed five of the last six, and it looks like, realistically, he's going to be out for another couple of games. I know they said they were trying to sort of manage the injury. If it doesn't get better and he can't get back into the lineup for the next another few games, you have to wonder if there is going to be some surgery here or some sort of medical procedure, that rest is just not enough here. But above and beyond the Radulov injury, as we talked about on Monday, excuse me, Montgomery had said how he wanted to jumble up in the lines. He was splitting up Ben and Seguin because they hadn't been playing together. He knew that they were felt that they would eventually come around, but he wanted to sort of spread out the offense there. So it looks like Seguin, Shore, and Janmark is the top line right now, with Jamie Benn playing with Spezza and Nushitskin. I do expect of movement here, unless these lines happen to click in the next couple of games and they start producing well, I do expect some shifting around here. Now, when Radulov does come back, assuming it doesn't, that sort of bad case scenario that I said, it does look pretty obvious that he will be on a line with Seguin. So, you know, at least for a good half a dozen to a dozen games, as Montgomery was sort of saying, so you're going to have your pairs of Spezza and Ben together and Seguin and Radulov together, and then try to find a third winger for each line to sort of fit in there. That is my expectation. But, of course, if we're here for five games from now and there is no offense coming from any of this experiment, I wouldn't be surprised to see the two of them put back together again in Dallas. For the Detroit Red Wings, not too much exciting to talk about here other than their injury issue. Vanek, lower body injury, lands him on the IR. He's going to be out at least 2 to 3 weeks. Nielsen, who has an undisclosed injury, has missed the last couple of games, is practicing, expected to come back this weekend. Athanasio, an undisclosed injury, missed the last couple of games. He is not practicing, expected to miss at least another 2 or 3 games. And DeKeyser, with that hand injury, I said on Monday that it was expected sometime at the end of this week he will return. It has not been confirmed, but it does look like their next game he should be back in the lineup as well. In Edmonton, Bouchard, as we speculated a couple of weeks ago, was indeed demoted. Not a surprise here, sort of a look-see situation, plus they had some injuries on the back line. I think it was sort of a good thing, you know, that he had the 9 games, but also a good thing that he is being demoted where he can continue to develop for the Edmonton Oilers. Outside of that, I don't think it's really any secret how much that team has been playing much better, but that right wing is still a black hole, not really anything going well. Yamamoto has not been playing well. Puju Jarvi has not been playing well. They are both currently and in recent games being healthy scratch because of it, and they are searching for that right wing. Cogliano, in their last game, got an opportunity to play on the top line with McDavid and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Now, it does look like TJ Reddy is just about ready to return. It could be as soon as their next game, but that is a little bit unclear. Either way, Reddy should certainly be back in the next couple of games for the Edmonton Oilers, and that should be a sort of ray of sunshine, but you still have a little bit of that issue of behind him. What is going on at that right wing? You have to wonder if it goes on much longer, if they're going to sort of look to sort of make some sort of trade, because the team overall looks to be coming together. But again, that right wing has just been getting no production or very good play at all. In Florida, just one little sort of line tweet, Hoffman, who has moved out of that top six for the last half dozen, seven games or so, found his game, and because of it, he is now back up on the second line with Trocheck and Huberdeau, like we expected from the beginning of the season. We talked, to start that, buy low topic, talking about Kopitar and L.A. and how in L.A., nothing's going right. It looks pretty bad there in L.A., which is sort of interesting that Kovalchuk, because of it, is now playing on that third line with Kempe and Lewis, and that top six is looking exactly like it has the last 2 years, with Iafallo playing with Kopitar and Brown, Pearson, Carter, and Toffoli together. Now, I sort of get it, because the last half dozen games, those guys have not been together, that top six. But they weren't playing very well when they were together to start the season. Either way, I think it's going to take a good handful of games for LA to even sort of start riding that ship. So fantasy-wise, outside of Kopitar and maybe Brown, who hasn't looked terrible since he has returned, I don't know if there's anybody I really want from the LA Kings right now. For the Minnesota Wild, again, early in the season, a lot of line shuffling, but this did catch my attention, especially since Zucker and Staal had been playing pretty well together for most of this early season. But those first line and third line wingers swapped out. So you got Greenway and Coyle playing with Staal, and Zucker and Niederreiter playing with Erickson Ek there. The only solid line that's been playing well all season in Minnesota is the Koivu, Granlund, and Parise line. In Nashville, Arvidsson with a lower body injury got him listed as day-to-day, missed one game. There's really actually very little information when it comes to Arvidsson. Now the party line, the PR line, the team line, is that it's not expected to be a long-term injury, just a game or two, but we've already had a couple of examples this young season of teams saying that, and then three or four games later, a player ends up on the IR for another week or two after that. So keep a close eye on that situation. At least the first game that he was out, or the one game that he did miss, Sissons did take his place on the top line. Little line tweak for the New Jersey Devils, as Zajac put with Johansson and Wood. Now, Wood and Zajac had been playing a lot of the season together, but they'd been keeping Johansson with Zajac. Zajac kind of flatlining again offensively. I know they're looking for a second line in terms of scoring, so it'll be interesting to see if that works out as well. In Pittsburgh, Broussard with the lower body injury listed day-to-day has now missed three games, and another situation where they're saying it's not going to be that long, but he hasn't been practicing from everything that I am reading and everybody that I've talked to so far, so I do expect it to be at least another couple of games before Broussard gets back into the lineup. And the one interesting wrinkle to keep an eye on there, certainly we've talked a number of times earlier in the season, that revolving right wing spot on the Crosby line, Dominic Simon getting the opportunity with Crosby and Gunsell their last game, and it looks like they're going to give him a couple of games to see if he clicks in. For the St. Louis Blues, and I mentioned this on Monday, Fabry about to come back. He finally did come back, but he didn't get right back in that top line like I thought he would. I thought he'd sort of slip into that third line. They put him on the fourth line with Thomas and Sundquist, but you know what? He had an assist 2 minutes into the game. Now, the one thing that's going well for the St. Louis Blues is the scoring overall, and they seem to be pretty comfortable and liking that top nine, at least at the moment. But don't be surprised if that sort of falls off, somebody gets injured, or somebody slows down offensively if Fabry gets an opportunity at that point. And this is, again, just a situation for fantasy owners to keep your eye on, because if he does get in that top line and he can stay healthy, which are, granted, two big ifs when it comes to Fabry, he is a guy who I am still intrigued with. For the Tampa Bay Lightning, and we talked about this on Monday, Palat, he was expected to miss two games, did miss the last couple of games, has been feeling better and looking better, playing in practice, so it does look realistic that he will indeed return to the lineup this weekend, although, again, that is not confirmed, at least just yet. And then finally, in Vancouver, Brandon Sutter with a shoulder injury falls on the IR. He is in the process of having an MRI. I haven't found any results from that yet. Either way, he's going to be out at least a couple of weeks. It's just a matter of how bad the MRI is. Is it going to be just a couple of weeks, or are you looking at 2 months here for the Vancouver Canuck? And one line note there, because I mentioned it specifically on Monday, how they put all the young guns together, Peterson and Boeser in particular, taking away from Horvat and whether that negatively affect Horvat. Well, Boeser is back playing with Horvat and Scheller, and Peterson playing with Goldeman and Louis Erickson there as well. All right, there's your IR and lines report for today as we turn our attention to the goalie report. Now, George, you already talked, or at least started talking a little bit about it earlier in the show when we were talking about buy-low candidates and goaltenders in particular, but I want to press you a little bit more on the Columbus Blue Jackets goaltending situation, just because, and again, this isn't surprising. I think we kind of talked it a little bit about in the offseason when we heard about Bobrovsky's discontent and the fact that he didn't want to negotiate a contract, and then he came into camp. And we don't have official confirmation, but from everybody that was talking, there was very strong speculation that he was like, yeah, I'm not signing. I'm not signing with you. So we sort of teased, or at least had at least brief conversations about the fact of, you know, does Bobrovsky want to stay? It looks like he doesn't, and what position that puts, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets in terms of trading him or not trading him. And then, of course, we had the situation where he started off the season pretty bad. Korpisalo got three straight starts recently, although you did point out that the last couple of games, Bobrovsky looks like he's starting to come around. So I guess I'm starting here for the goalie report. I'm trying to want to get you at least your pulse on the situation, your opinion, your perception, at least as of right now, because, again, if he's not going to sign there at all, do you have to trade him? I mean, because that's always the general feeling. Now, I had, you know, my reasons for not doing that I expressed in the off season, that I think this Columbus team has maybe just got to stick with Panarin and Bobrovsky and try to sort of, you know, have a decent playoff run, get into the playoffs, because they just can't be selling those two players and essentially start rebuilding again with their history. That's at least my sense of the situation, you know, overall for Columbus. But because even with Bobrovsky looking like he's starting to come around, overall he hasn't played well early here in the season. Korpisalo looked at least pretty good in most of the games that he's played. So I'm wondering, is Korpisalo, in your opinion, a must handcuff for Bobrovsky? And to my original question, do you think Bobrovsky is likely to get traded? And with the way that the season started, do you think that could happen sooner, you know, in the next couple of months, rather than waiting to the deadline? Now, I know this is very speculative, and you don't always like to go to that speculation place, but at least in this particular instance, I'm going to sort of press you on it, George. So that Columbus goaltending situation, as I just described it, what's your sense of the situation overall, both on the ice and from a fantasy aspect? George?
Well, it's a strange situation. It's strange in that Bobrovsky doesn't want to sign. From all reports, he doesn't want to play there. Yeah, he's done, wants to move on. That's not to say he's unhappy there, but maybe there's someplace else he'd rather play. You know, just for giggles, and maybe it's New York. He wants to be in New York, always loves New York, wants to be in the bright lights, whatever it might be. So he's a free agent. He knows he can finally do that. He can go play next season, I guess for the Islanders, is the greatest ever goaltender. Like I said, maybe that's it. It could be he wants to play in L.A. It could be in Chicago, whatever the hell it is. You know, he wants out of Columbus. But you would think the pressure wouldn't be on him then. It's his decision. It's not like, oh, I want to stay in Columbus. I want my $40 million contract. Oh, God, I got to play well. So you know, it's not that. This is his decision from reports. So the fact that he's not playing well is strange. My guess is he's putting pressure on himself. to get that big deal, to get that big deal from the whatever team he's hoping for next year, wherever he wants to play. You know, and now he's just not playing very well, you know, because of it. Now, I mentioned earlier, he has played two good games in a row now. Maybe he's starting to snap out of it, so maybe that'll help him to get dealt in the NHL. I think this also depends a lot. I mean, once again, you and I have talked about goaltenders for quite a while. Trading goaltenders in the NHL is difficult. Generally, you do not get value, not for what you think a goaltender is worth. Columbus right now is third place in the Metro Division, a point behind the a point out of first place. So, what does this mean? Does this mean Columbus should deal him? Probably not. It also brings Corpus Allen into the picture. His numbers are not very good. He doesn't look like he can. It's not like they have a top notch backup goaltender or a top notch guy in the mind to take over for him if they were to trade him. So this puts Columbus in a quandary. If they trade Bobrovsky, they're likely saying, okay, we're trading in the season. We're playing for next year. You know, and then it brings up, well, if we do that, we can't get enough back for Bobrovsky to make that make sense. It's not going to get back 3 first-round picks or, you know, first-round pick at a top prospect where it would make sense to do that. So I think as long as Columbus stays in the playoff picture, which we all expect them to do, I don't think anybody really expects them to, you know, bottom out, I don't think they're going to be able to move them. I just don't think so. Because trade deadline's late February. It's February 29th, or 20th, whatever it is. It's late February. I mean, yes, there's only 6 weeks left in the season then, so it's easier to sell trading them. But, I mean, if you're bottoming out, okay, it makes more sense. But if you're in the playoff hunt, what are you signaling to your fans by trading Bobrovsky, assuming you don't get a goaltender back, and then you put Korpisalo in net, assuming he doesn't get much better, and I mean much better than he's played right now? You're raising the white flag. It just doesn't make any sense, Scott. There's nothing here that makes sense. This is, once again, another issue that should have been addressed during the off season. If he doesn't want to play here, move him. But I think it also comes down to goaltenders hard to move. And once again, you didn't have another one in your organization. You would have probably had to trade Bobrovsky to another team that wanted to get rid of their starting goaltender for whatever reason. Yeah, I mean, a perfect example might have been the Rangers if Lundqvist didn't want to play for what we all expect to be a losing team. You know, maybe that could have worked out. The Rangers could have got Bobrovsky, built around him for the future, and Columbus gets the better goaltender now. Lundqvist gets to play for a win team. That could have been something that was a win-win, but that's something that pretty much has to be addressed during the offseason, not now. So it's a mess. Bottom line, it's a mess. Fantasy-wise, you have Bobrovsky, you're really hoping and praying. You can snatch up Korpisalo, but I've already pointed out his numbers aren't very good. Doesn't look very good. So he's not going to help your fantasy team. Not right now. Maybe he does when he plays a whole bunch of games in a row, but they're giving him that chance, and it's not very good. So I think you could snap up just to make sure you have a goalie. Because if you're in one of those leagues where every goaltender is gone, yeah, you might want to cover yourself just in case. But is he going to be the end goal? No. Matter of fact, if Bobrovsky is your number one goalie and he gets dealt, could be a fatal blow to your team if you don't have a good third goaltender. You may not be able to recover from that. So you better hope he stays there all year. Or you better keep working on trades from now until your deadline to see if you can get a better backup goaltender. So Bobrovsky is a problem. But like I said, right now he's playing better, so that's good. But I think Columbus odds are in the end, it's going to be proven that they I don't want to use that word. You use it. They shit the bed in this situation. You know, I think they screwed this up, and it's going to come back to haunt them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's almost too bad I actually didn't think of asking this question on Monday because he's obviously this week had the couple of better games bouncing back. But ultimately, you know, and I think you really sort of put this in context really well. You know, as long as he's playing reasonably well, you know, partially for the reasons that I sort of mentioned when we had this conversation in the offseason and I was just hinting about now, you know, I just don't think Columbus can make that trade now. If he sort of reverts, if this was just these last two back-to-back games were just, you know, an aberration and he sort of reverts back to how he was playing, you know, in most of the rest of the games this season, where he's just not playing well and he's not looking well and the team is losing, then I think it sort of makes sense because obviously the mental aspect is getting to him and he can't get over it and you just sort of got to cut bait because you're losing anyway. But if it sort of comes around, I think, you know, everything you said, sort of you're not going to get the value back for him on the ice. You know, so you might as well sort of at least play this situation out. Either way, as you just mentioned, it is a complicated and difficult situation for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Now, I'm sort of, if I'm a Bobrovsky owner, fantasy-wise, I'm hovering around Korpisalo. If I have space on my roster, dead space, you know, a lot of players, obviously fantasy players, like, you know, intentionally keep the back end of the roster, a roster spot or two open, or with a player that they're very willing to drop if they make a need. If you have that room, I snap up Korpisalo at least on the short term to see if Bobrovsky sort of reverts back. But otherwise, I think you're right that it's really not sort of worth it unless you have sort of a black hole in your goaltending. All right, George, let's get around to the rest of the goalie report and what's happening around the NHL. Anything particularly significant to report to us about the goaltending position? George?
All right. Well, the big news is Jonathan Quick. This is what we joked about. You and I joked about this on Monday about how the teams would never lie to us. Well, the Kings lied to us. It's day to day. And then it was strange, right? Quick was put on IR. Then he was taken off IR, had surgery, and then put back on IR. What the hell? You know, really, well, what the hell? That was a strange situation. I had to screw up some fantasy leagues because if you play in a league like we do, the league you and I play in, the guy who had Quick had to take him off IR, release the player they claimed for him, they want to put him back on IR to get that player back because that's what the Kings did. Strange. I don't know if there was an accounting move there, someone hit the wrong button or whatever the hell it was. But anyway, King, meniscus, torn meniscus, knee surgery, out 3 to 6 weeks. Not going to see him maybe until, you know, the Christmas holidays, somewhere around there. So get Jack Campbell back, I guess, assuming in most leagues. We did have some good news, though. Pekka Rinne, return, play well. Corey Schneider, return, play well. You're safe to get these guys back in your lineup once again. And probably the biggest surprise that really, once again, we were lied to. Oh, yeah, no, he's just making the Finland trip. He's not going to play. Just going to be with the team here. Well, Roberto Luongo playing today, playing right now. You know, they're at the end of the first period here late in the first period here. Not playing very well, mind you. Winnipeg has just scored. They lead the Florida Panthers 2-1 late first period here. But Roberto Luongo is back. He's back, Scott. So, once again, starting next week, I would say. And I think one thing, this is actually good for fantasy owners. Because he's playing now, you weren't putting him in your lineup anyway, so you get to see him play your game or two, make sure he's healthy, and then you can put him in your lineup next week. You know, get him back in there, assuming you need him. And Scott, it's funny. Two guys we talked about, Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers, both scored. So I said, the days of Laine, that's done. You're not getting him. Nikolai Ehlers, still it's only his second goal of the season, scored on a quasi-breakaway there. So Nikolai Ehlers and Laine have scored, so much for getting them buying low on Laine. That ended yesterday anyway, but he's just putting an exclamation point on it. And Jenny Dodonov, this guy just always scores goals. That's all he does, score goals. Another goal for Florida. 2-1 Winnipeg in late first period. So otherwise, Boston, Halak's going to start Saturday. You know, he's starting to rest again tomorrow. So if you're looking for a goaltender, there you go. I mentioned Florida a long ago. Back New York Islanders, Leonard's practicing today. Looks like he's okay to at least back up. Thomas Grice, whatever you want to call him. I think you and I'm sure we mispronounced the name a lot, but we say a different pronunciation of his last name every time we talk about it, which is strange since I'm an Islander fan. I should probably know this. I think it's Grice or a fan, but who the hell knows. But he's Leonard's back practicing. I expect him to at least be able to back up Grice tomorrow when the Islanders play with Devils. Other news that's going on here. Ottawa, they put Condon on waivers. He cleared. McCann has been recalled. He'll back up Craig Anderson. St. Louis, Allen's okay. We mentioned he was a little banged up Monday. Ville Husso was sent back to the AHL. And Nashville, of course, sent back Troy Grosnick to the AHL once Pekka Rinne not only returned, but returned successfully in defeating the Tampa Bay Lightning.
All right, George, thanks for the goalie report as well. Nice to hear some good news coming out of it. In particular, you know, the follow-up question I always ask you, but as we've both bemoaned the NHL schedule, just 5 teams with 2 games this weekend, and that's one of the things that sort of confuses me the most about this weird light early season NHL schedule is having so few teams playing 2 games during the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That would seem like the prime time that you'd want people to come to your games, let alone view them. I understand people might view it less on TV during the weekend because people go out, but that's certainly also the time that people physically go to the games more, generally speaking. So just 5 teams, George. playing two games this weekend, although all four, five of them do have back-to-back situations facilitating usually that backup start, which is one of the things that we're looking at when we're looking to stream goaltenders fantasy-wise. So what backup goaltenders might have some a good start this weekend that you'd be intrigued to stream them if so needed for fantasy owners, or even low-owned number one goaltenders that might be out there for fantasy owners as well? What jumps out at you in terms of recommendations for goalies this weekend, George?
Not much. Really not much. You mentioned there are, I guess, 10 teams. But the problem is it's just not there's only five games back-to-back, and there's just not much out there. There's not much out there this weekend for whatever reason it might be. You look at Buffalo. They play back-to-back on Saturday and Sunday, but you don't want the Buffalo goaltender. You barely want Hutton. Carolina, Darling looks like he's going to start tonight. That has not been written in ink yet, but he'll start tonight against Arizona, which could lead to Mrazek tomorrow against Vegas. But then again, there's always a chance it's not. You just don't know. And do you care anyway? Is Vegas a decent team? Not what they were last year, but decent. Columbus, already said, Korpisalo's not playing well. You know, I expect Bobrovsky to get the Kings tomorrow. Do you want Korpisalo against the Ducks? I probably do, mainly because Ducks is not playing very well. You know, I own Gibson in at least two leagues, and I don't know when the last time he got a win was. It's been at least a couple of weeks. Ducks aren't playing all that well. The Ducks are banged up all the hell. So I might give Korpisalo a shot here. Once again, I don't know if I'd call it desperation there, Scott, but it's close. If it's not desperation, it's the next tier down or next tier up, depending on which way you want to look at it. Ottawa, I mean, I'm not putting McKenna in. Even if they put McKenna in against Buffalo and save Anderson for Tampa Bay, I'll pass. No, thank you. So my number one guy by far, I mean, it's not even close, is Domingue. And I mentioned this on Monday. He's the guy I wanted. Tampa Bay, after losing to Nashville last night, they played Montreal and Ottawa back-to-back. They're in Canada, but still, I don't care which one Domingue gets. I guess I'd prefer Ottawa since Montreal's playing so well. Defeated Washington last night, 6-4. Good game. But Domingue is my number one guy here. As a Korpisalo is somebody I will certainly think about, mainly because I assume it's a Ducks he'll play, and the Ducks haven't played very well. Not that the Kings have. But if you're, you know, if desperation, desperate times call for desperate measures, Korpisalo could once again be in my lineup. But once again, that's not because of the Bobrovsky situation. You know, Korpisalo has not played very well. It's just the fact that he's the best of what's available.
All right, George, thanks for your breakdown. As always, super valuable for both fans and fantasy owners. I'll let you go as I wrap things up with the skater recommendations for all of our for our fantasy owners, that is. Looking at the schedule, you know, at least it's a little bit rosier when it comes to the offense of options for a lot of us out there. Buffalo, not, you know, okay, I get it. We're not exactly thrilled with Buffalo as, you know, a fantasy target, but you're playing Ottawa and the New York Rangers, and you do have a top line that is playing pretty well. They certainly are searching for line combinations past that top line, but it certainly makes the Sabres a team that I'm not going to dismiss this weekend. Carolina, sort of a situation, the same situation that the fact that their top line is clicking pretty well, but after that it gets a little bit dicey. And a tougher schedule, playing with an Arizona team that's playing much better lately. The Vegas Golden Knights aren't playing nearly as well as they played last year, but they're still pretty solid team. So I'm not sort of as excited about Carolina this weekend. Columbus playing two California teams that are playing bad. L.A. obviously has been a dumpster fire in the last half dozen games or so, and George already detailed Anaheim and their woes of late as well. Ottawa. Okay, I'm really not that excited about them, but they have some possibilities. I mentioned earlier in the week, Matt Duchene playing very well, and he is widely available. So outside of him, though, it gets pretty dicey. But Tampa Bay Lightning playing Montreal, even though they're playing well, and Ottawa is particularly appealing. So Buffalo and Tampa Bay are the two teams. If you're looking for a player to get two games out of them for this weekend, those are the two teams that I'm looking at. If you're just looking for one-offs, do have a couple of suggestions, at least as far as teams to look at for tonight. Arizona playing so well and clicking offensively, there's a few players from the Arizona team that might intrigue me, especially if I am just looking to stream a player. So they're a team I'm going to look at. I sort of missed the boat because they're playing so early already, but Winnipeg was another team that I'd be intrigued with streaming for today. Now, as far as Sabu is concerned, I know most of us are going to have full lineups for those daily lineup leagues anyway. But if you were to have a hole in your lineup, that Toronto-Pittsburgh game, players from both of those teams I'd be looking at. And there are a couple options outside of those big names. Simon, for example, playing on the top line for Crosby. Marleau is only about 48% owned, I believe, in most leagues on average. And San Jose playing Philadelphia. Even though Philadelphia last game looking a little bit better finally, still, it's just been pretty ugly for the most part with their goalie play. So San Jose is intriguing, possibly for Sabe as well. And as far as Sunday, you got to look at that Tampa game playing against the Ottawa Senators. As far as specific player recommendations from those Tampa Bay Lightnings, how about JT Miller, the Tampa Bay center, left wing and right wing eligible player, at least in Yahoo leagues, only 52% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo, and he's back up playing on the top line with Stamkos and Kucherov, as I mentioned, on Monday's game. But, you know, still putting up pretty decent numbers, even when he wasn't on that top line. 10 points in 12 games overall, 3 goals, 7 assists, 5 power play points, 21 hits, and he tends to be more of a hitter when he's playing on a top line, more that physical presence. Not that that goes away when he's not playing with Stamkos and Kucherov, but that is a little bit even more his role when playing with them. Playing Montreal and Ottawa this weekend, and even bleeding into next week, playing Edmonton and the Islanders at home, so you can get a nice four-game stretch from him if you were to need it. So JT Miller certainly be my top recommendations for this weekend. Anthony Duclair, the Columbus left-wing, right-wing eligible player, at least in Yahoo leagues, only 3% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo overall. Last four games, 3 goals, 1 assist, a power play goal, averaging over 2.5 shots on goal per game. And he's got 8 points in 10 games overall, playing with Weinberg and Bukestad. And they're playing those two bad California teams this weekend in L.A. and Anaheim. So he could be a nice streamer possibility for you for the weekend. And a player, I usually don't like to recommend players in back-to-back shows, but I did mention Pommaville on Monday, and I mentioned how this weekend I like them playing Ottawa and the New York Rangers, especially with him on the top line with Eichel and Skinner, that top line playing pretty well these last 6 games or so. In the Buffalo right wing is only 31% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, and as I said, in the last 6 games, 5 goals, 5 assists, plus 7, 2 power play points, averaging 4 shots on goal per game, and they got that good schedule this weekend, plus Montreal and Vancouver starting next week. Now, obviously, Montreal's playing pretty well, but still, another player you can get a nice 4-game stretch from if you hadn't picked him up at the beginning of the week, like I suggested. And then finally, Gal Yenchuk from the Arizona Coyotes, center left wing eligible, at least in Yahoo leagues, 48% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo in the last 4 games, or the 4 games that he's played this season since he's come back. He's got a goal and 3 assists, plus 4, a power play point, playing with Keller and Panic on that top line. Just 1 game this weekend. It is for tonight for Carolina. I like that matchup, but even bleeding into next week, he got home and home against the Philadelphia Flyers, who, again, looked better in the last game, but recently have not looked good at all. If you needed a center, though, for just tonight, I'm also looking at Derek Stefan. The Arizona center is only 16% owned on average in ESPN and Yahoo leagues. In the last 5 games, he's got 2 goals, 4 assists, and a plus 5 playing on that second line with Perlini and Fisher. All right, folks, there you go. That's what our show for today. Hope you have a good hockey weekend, everybody, and we will talk to you on Monday, as we always do.